Welcome to the David Crib podcast. This episode is relating to the collaboration with The Forms Gallery, founded and directed by Anthea Bass. Anthea connected with David Kurtz and gallery director Amay Bell to facilitate a collaborative physical exhibition. To foster the collaborative relationship, the artists will be working at the David Kurtz workshop to produce unique prints on paper. Adrian Fortein, Matty Monetti, and Kotso Matsuneng are the three artists I'll be speaking to in this series, finding out more about their artistic practice, their experience in the workshop, and what we can expect to see in the exhibition. Check out the description for all the related links to the artist pages, websites, and social media platforms. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hi listeners, and welcome to the David Crib podcast. I'm your host, Britt Lawton, and today I'm sitting with another of the Forms Gallery artists, Adrian Fortein. So welcome Adrian, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So we're looking forward to getting to know a little bit more about you as an artist and your collaboration with us and the work that you're producing in the workshop at the moment. So you've been in the workshop for the past 2 weeks. This is just a good opportunity to catch up and find out more about your experience and about who you are ahead of the upcoming exhibition. So I think a great place to start would actually be to find out how you became an artist and how you got into the arts.
Oh, that's an interesting story, because for a long time I didn't think about art or making art or becoming an artist. For the majority of my childhood, especially when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a professional soccer player, a professional footballer. So that was my first segue into doing something like kind of unconventional in terms of profession. And I really enjoyed the idea of playing. So there was something about it that I really enjoyed that was not part of this 9-to-5 kind of work routine. And I think from there, that was something that I wanted to keep. And when the football didn't, you know, work out the way I would have liked, because at some point it was not about playing anymore, it became a career, it became a job, money was involved, and you know, it just changed the ethic of things. And I think I just wanted to have that freedom to kind of creatively express myself in some way. And I think after like football, I kind of came home and I was looking for something to do that will kind of fit that idea of having this creative expression and freedom and this something that was away from the very strict confines of a 9-to-5. And I started drawing, started reading, and slowly I did my research and found out that being an artist was a profession, and it was something that you could kind of create for yourself, and you can create the own terms of that for yourself. And there was freedom in finding out what that could be for me, and I think that's how I got into it. So then I enrolled in art school and so on and so forth.
No, that's really cool. And a challenging question now, just out of curiosity, at what point did you kind of consider yourself an artist? Because I like the way that you're describing the fact that you can create the confines and stuff as an artist, like your career, you can create that. So at what point in your career did you decide, okay, I'm an artist? Was there a turning point?
There was a turning point, and I think it didn't happen from the get-go. It was something that I had to own, you know, and claim for myself. And I think that only happened in second or third year varsity, where I said to myself, I'm committing to this and I'm going to own it, and this is what I choose. And at that point, then I say, I was when I became an artist. Yeah.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. And it is nice, you know what I like? That relation that you've put with, you know, playing soccer and art now. Like, there is a bit of play, a sense of play that happens. I wondered what your usual medium is when you do create work or in your own practice.
I think the medium kind of comes later in the process. It always usually begins with thinking through ideas and then kind of writing through these ideas or researching. And then the medium would start to emerge, would emerge out of that. So oftentimes it would start, takes space, is writing down ideas, and then become drawings, and then it might move on to something that is more lens-based. But it always usually starts with the conceptual framework and then kind of emerges from there.
And your conceptual framework, can I ask, is there something that triggers those thoughts or those ideas? Is there something that you, or a process or something that you use to kind of create the conceptual framework for yourself?
I think it's sort of an ongoing journey of discovery, self-discovery, also discovery of environment, reality, and perceptions of that, and this intuition and intersubjectivity within that. And I think I'm very curious about those kind of questions, and just interested in perceiving things in unique ways. And I think that often kind of is the catalyst for the research, is this curiosity, also curiosity of ways of understanding the world that are not necessarily modern, maybe even pre-modern, and having these interests also creates very interesting perspectives in thinking about certain ideas. And I think that's what I try to do, is just try and shift these perspectives around and see what comes from that.
No, that's very cool. And I mean, I must say, even just looking at the titles of the works that you've made in the workshop, I think, let's talk about that first and then we'll get to your experience in the workshop. But just touching now on your conceptual framework and your thoughts and the kind of curiosity you have for questions and things like that. The one title that really struck me when looking at your work was The Weightlessness of History to Born Free. I mean, that opens a lot of conversation. It's a great title. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you would be able to maybe give us some insights into your thinking of that kind of statement.
Sure. Recently, during the conversations I've been having, this idea of weightlessness has been coming up, and also I think passages of time and how they exist in the present, both past and the future, all existing in this one moment, and also being very aware of and conscious of what's happening now, and, you know, this time in our history, and how that kind of creates this sensation of, you know, it's daily life, you feel certain things that are not necessarily tangible. And you can feel like history, in a sense, especially as a young person that was born after a period of apartheid. I didn't live through it, but I kind of feel it, you know, in my daily life. I didn't experience it firsthand, but I'm kind of experiencing, I don't know if I can call it aftershock, or there's something that lingers that I can feel. And it's not necessarily a tangible feeling, but it has some weight to it, but it's not something physical, so it's not really weighty, but kind of weightless. And that kind of feeling, being very aware of it, was something that I wanted to touch on.
No, it's great, and that title really does encapsulate that thought process. And I wondered, obviously you've mentioned your own relation to your experience and stuff, how much of your identity and yourself is in your artworks?
Look, I don't particularly use that as a catalyst for what I make. I think it will be there inevitably, whether or not I think about it. And it's something that I am aware of. I am conscious of it. I am conscious of my position and the position that I occupy within society based on my identity and the history that comes with that. But it's not something that I want to use to assert myself within the world of forms. I think acts of self-determination can be limited by identity. And even those constructs, being as limiting as they are, I am aware of them, but I feel like they can be limiting as well, because I think we are much more than just our identity. And maybe even in a spiritual sense, there is more to us than what's on the surface.
Absolutely. There's so much under the surface that, you know, and artists and creatives can actually tap into that. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to do that. So now also just touching base on your experience in the workshop. Have you done printmaking before? Yes. What's your kind of experience with printmaking, and how did that compare to your experience at the Daybreaker workshop?
Well, I have done printmaking before. Obviously, at art school, I did it, and I did do some monotypes at the edition Verso with Sarah Amy, That was very interesting. It was the first time working in a print studio outside of art school. I really enjoyed the experience, very different to the one at art school. And I think that experience at Edition Verso definitely helped me become familiar with the way of working, because we did monotypes as well. And I became familiar with the media and the treatment of the watercolor and the crayons and so forth, which was something I really enjoyed, and I think that filtered through and something I brought with me when I went into the workshop. So I wasn't necessarily finding myself in totally new territory. I had some familiarity with the process, and it was amazing to be in the workshop with everyone that was there in the workshop, you know, the printmakers. It was an amazing experience, because everyone was so happy to try new things, and I'm all about that, you know, seeing what can happen if you stretch the medium. And I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also what's been quite cool with you working in the workshop is that you haven't only done monotypes, you've also worked with cyanotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of a background as to what a cyanotype is and why you decided to use that medium too?
Oh, sure. So the cyanotypes is a chemical process that creates a photo transfer of another image. And it was used for the original blueprints. That's where the name blueprint comes from, because the cyanotypes are blue. And it was a way of transferring blueprints without having to redraw them each time. This was before, obviously, they had the means to make reproductions in the way we do now. And I think the cyanotype process was something that I was interested in, because I was looking to kind of create a relationship between a light room and a dark room. And the cyanotype has aspects where you're in a dark room, you're using chemicals and so on and so forth. But I also wanted to see what could happen if we use that in the print studio and making monotypes of that as well. And because I have been working in the darkroom, in the photo darkroom, and this has been something that I've been interested in, is this relationship between lightroom and darkroom, between hand gestures, between the kind of mechanical objects within the darkroom, and finding this relationship and see what comes from that relationship between all these things.
Mm. And I actually like what's come from that, because I've noticed that you're working quite large scale with the monotypes too, and now you're incorporating like the sheen clay elements which incorporate the images from the cyanotypes too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a bit about how that collage element came into be, or what sheen clay,
mm-hmm.
that process, or how you feel about that technique?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a very interesting technique, because I have been working in collage as well, you know, putting images together in that way was very interesting, because you create relationships within one image from multiple images, which, you know, creates very interesting narratives, very interesting stories, very interesting links between the images, which I thought was really nice to have that option to do as well. And I think it was very fitting, because I was pulling kind of different ideas, different images, and putting them into one. It was almost like the conceptual process was a collage in a sense.
Yeah.
So I think it was very fitting that the sheen clay process was part of it.
Yeah. And the images that you're using in your work, are they like symbolic images, or how do those images come about? Is there an example you can maybe give us?
Are you talking about the photographic images?
The photographic images, and also I know you've got figures in some of your monotypes and a ship that recurs as well. I don't know if you can elaborate.
Sure. With the photographic images, the images that I have been taken, so those images, some of them are from maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but it's just I have been shooting consistently for the past 6 years. Some of the images are from travels, so I did travel to Namibia, some of this travels to visit family and so on and so forth, and it's a combination of those, and I think very interesting moments, because these images are weighty, you know, they have a weight of their own, and also I've used them in a way that, like you were saying, they have a symbolism to them. But it was also about using that symbolism and transmuting it. For example, one of the images is in the town of Hentisbaai in Namibia. It's a coastal town, quite far out from, you know, the major cities. But in the town they have this monument, which is a noose. It's like an old tree, and you've got the noose hanging over there. And it's to remind people not to do anything wrong, because this is what happens. And I thought It was very fitting because you speak about the weightlessness of history, and you know, you see these objects, these monuments that have their own weight, and it was also about using that as a symbol, but also seeing how I could insert myself into that moment and then transmute it. And then there was moments with the Shinkole where the noose becomes something else, becomes a totem as opposed to a threatening kind of symbol.
Knowing, like, your work is incredibly conceptual. I mean, I can hear just from the way that you're talking about it, you think very deeply about mm-hmm. this. So your practice is almost quite introspective. How was the experience working in a space where you were collaborating with a lot of different printmakers, and there were other artists, you know, walking in the studio and stuff? How did that experience influence you, if it did?
No, definitely. It influenced me a lot. And you work in the studio, and even though you're coming with your own ideas and so on and so forth, you're definitely bouncing off ideas, and you're speaking and you're talking about things. And even if it's just casual conversation, that has an effect. And even people that just come into the studio and they look at something and they provide their own perspective, which is a unique perspective, which opens up your scope and your understanding of what you made yourself. And that was very interesting. Even with the one monotype with the figure that's upside down, there was a guy who came in the studio and he found a relationship to that, to a theatre production that he was involved in, and a relationship to Franz Kafka and one of his short stories. If I remember correctly, it was a report to an academy. And the figure hanging upside down reminded him of the ape that was doing this report to the academy, and this perspective that he had to shift in order to relate to human beings, which is very interesting. And moments like that are definitely part of it. You know, that's why we do what we do, because we're communicating on so many different levels. And I thought it was very interesting to be a part of that community, because it definitely shaped the outcome of what was happening and what was being made.
Definitely. And I mean, I must say, that's probably why my favorite kind of art is conceptual, because of those conversations that get sparked and mm-hmm. all those links and connections that can get made.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also wanted to ask, because also noticing you work in the workshop, at one point I saw you working on a large Perspex plate and you were drawing, and you get very engrossed in your process. Is there something that kind of enhances that creative flow? Is there something that you do to get into that mode? Is it mm-hmm. just happen organically?
Well, it's a commitment to the image. And once committing to the image, I almost make a promise to myself to follow through and, you know, channel it fully and do the best I can to get whatever it is that needs to go on there. And for me, that's why I get so engrossed, because I feel like the energy that's there, it needs to come out at that moment, as urgent as it is, as raw as it is, and as unfiltered. And sometimes that takes a very kind of meditative state of being focused. But I think it's just the commitment to it, you know, that really pushes and drives the world to finish it and allow it to exist in the world. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. And I can't wait to see, I think our listeners as well can't wait to see the kind of accumulation of the work that you've created in the workshop on display in this upcoming exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I haven't touched on and wanted to ask you about is, obviously this collaboration has come out from the David Cook workshop, working with
mm-hmm.
Forms Gallery, run by, founded and directed by Anthea Bayes.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become affiliated with Forms Gallery?
Anthea reached out to me. She saw some of my work and she just reached out to me, and we had conversations and we spoke about what it could be if we would collaborate and work together and what it would mean for me, and how that relationship would benefit me, but also how I could become a part of Forms Gallery. And it was just simply that, you know. And I think when Anthea approached me, in the conversations we had, it felt as if I was in a good place, in good hands. So yeah, thanks to Anthea for organizing this collaboration.
Mm. No, same. I mean, I think we're grateful, obviously, because Anthea's brought yourself, Matty, and Kotso into our arena, so it's very exciting to have new artists in our space and to work in a different way too. I wondered if this experience, if there's anything maybe from working in the workshop and from, you know, working in monotype and cyanotype that you are going to be carrying forward into your practice going forward.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Right now I'm We started a residency with Bettina Malcolmus at the Joining Room.
Amazing.
And the whole idea, premise of that was to think about the link or relationship between a light room and a dark room, like I was discussing earlier. And this monotype process has kind of set up some tools or kind of approaches to that. And I think working with the sign type as well, and kind of mark making and gestures of that with the images, it's definitely created some interesting moments that I can take with me into this new residency where I will be pushing that idea further.
Yeah. No, that's very exciting, and good luck for that residency.
Thank you.
So yeah, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure to learn all about your experiences and your process and your way of thinking. And I can't wait for the rest of our audience to see your works in this upcoming exhibition as mentioned. So
thanks,
Adrian, and we'll chat soon.
Cool, thank you.